Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Anderson, and you are listening to Wrestling Uncensored.
This is Brett the Hitman Hart, and you're listening to Wrestling Uncensored.
This is Aaron Schick, and you're listening to the Wrestling Invention.
Hey, this is Trish Stratus, and you're listening to Wrestling Uncensored. Keep listening. Yeah. Stratisfaction is guaranteed.
This is Daniel Bryan, and you're listening to Wrestling Uncensored.
Word on road is the click about to blow. You ain't gotta run and tell nobody, they already know. We've been living on a high, they've been talking on a low. But it's cool, know you heard it all before. That's why I asked you how you mean, how you mean. Thought you knew about the team, hey. That's why I asked you how you mean.
Yeah, welcome to Pro Wrestling Uncensored. I am Dave Simon. Jeremy Prophet is with me as always. www.wrestlinguncensored.net is our website right here on TSN 990 every Saturday night. Prophet, a lot of pro wrestling to get to tomorrow night. WWE No Way Out on pay-per-view. I'm excited. Daniel Bryan, Kane, CM Punk, the triple threat match for the WWE title. Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler now for the World Heavyweight title. And, of course, we'll talk about that. Alberto Del Rio is hurt, apparently suffered a concussion. I think he may have even asked for his release from the WWE. Things are happening with Alberto Del Rio. Things are happening all over the professional wrestling world. We'll also speak to a friend of the program, a friend of yours, Jeremy Prophet, and a new friend of ours as well, Jason Rumble from the Boston area, a guy that's been in the wrestling business for a while, trained by Killer Kowalski. So we'll talk to Jason a little bit later on. But first of all, Prophet, let's talk about Vince McMahon on Monday Night Raw. Vince is back, and I thought he was fun to watch. A three-hour Raw, you know, I was kind of dreading the fact that it was going to be 3 hours, wondering what they were really going to bring out, but I thought it was pretty good. There was a lot of Vince, and it was entertaining.
Yep, it was a long-awaited return of the chairman of the board, Vince McMahon, and I have to agree with you. You know, the segments involving Vince were entertaining. It seems like he had been off TV for so long, he really wanted to come back with a lot of pizzazz, a lot of enthusiasm. And I found the way he approached John Laurinaitis in that opening segment, it just caught your attention. You know, it seemed like it was going to be the typical start to Raw with Laurinaitis coming out and rambling on, but then Vince comes out, cuts him off, and made a lot of points that were really interesting. Like when he told him, you know, why should I not fire you? You know, you're the same guy who hired the wrong one-legged wrestler. Which, you know, that was a big story back when they had hired Zach Gowen. They actually sent the contract to another one-legged wrestler, had to tell him, no, it's not you we're hiring, it's Zach Gowen. That was a shoot.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of other aspects there in that promo where it was like Vince was kind of taking John Laurinaitis to task publicly over a lot of the blunders that he's made. And I really enjoyed that segment, and it seemed like perhaps John Laurinaitis was not aware of a lot of what was going to be said.
Yeah.
Because he was, like, stumbling over his words. He said, you know, we're approaching the 100th episode of Raw. I found that hilarious when he said we're approaching the 100th, or it's the 1,000th that they're approaching. You know, the show starts in 93, and they've only had, you know, 90-something episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
Johnny Ace.
What did you think about Vince McMahon? What did you think about Vince saying, you know, you signed Big Show to this contract, Big Show hasn't been relevant since 1999?
I felt he was right in saying that, because, I mean, it's true. Big Show was a big deal when they brought him over in 99, but what has he done that's so memorable? For me personally, the most entertaining I found Big Show during his run, aside from 99, was when he went to ECW and he was ECW champion. You know, and then coming back and fighting Floyd Mayweather and, you know, falling back into mid-card obscurity. To me, that sums up Big Show's timeline. You know, I look at it and it's like, okay, he won the WWE title in 99-2000, it was kind of irrelevant. And then, you know, floundered around the mid-card attraction, big giant. You know, became ECW champion, got a lot of controversy, but I found he did his best matches when he was ECW champion. And then came back, did the thing with Mayweather, and the rest of what he's done has been really irrelevant. Can you argue with that, David? Do you have any other points to add to the Big Show timeline that were maybe more interesting?
Nope. I think you pretty much nailed it. The ECW run was his best run. Awesome run. That match that he had, the Extreme Rules match with Ric Flair for the ECW title, that was awesome. That was like one of my favorite Flair matches.
I would even say that I think this right now with John Cena, depending how this goes, this could be the next most relevant thing in Big Show's career. But, I mean, yeah. for that many years, approaching, I mean, how many years would that be? That would be 14 years. That long, that's all that you have as, you know, memorable moments in your career. It shows how much of a waste of money Big Show had been for the most part of his run.
Yeah, he really hasn't done a lot. But I thought it was, I mean, knowing all this, the fact that Vince McMahon would go out on live TV and say that, say he hasn't been relevant since 1999 when you've employed him ever since, it's an interesting move. I mean, a part of it is obviously the storyline, but part of it is, you know, there is a lot of truth based there.
I think we saw pipe bomb Vince this week. I mean, between him saying that to the Big Show and then the segment with Natalia where he just, you know, buries the Hart family.
Yeah.
And then telling Daniel Bryan, you know, if we saw you with a bag of groceries, no one would mistake you for a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
Vince, I think they're just allowing him to go out there and say whatever he wants.
I thought some of the things he was saying, I mean, were a bit crazy. And also were, you know, it was really the true Vince. It felt very much to me like this is who Vince really is. You know, he sees the Funkasaurus girls and he starts dancing and gyrating with them. You know, that's the true Vince, which kind of brings me to Cranky Vince, the Twitter account that was very, very funny. Somebody, I think within the WWE, maybe on the writing staff, did a parody Vince McMahon account on Twitter. It had about 8,000 followers. I was following it, and it was highly entertaining. And I think the WWE had it shut down this week as Cranky Vince is gone. Where does the WWE shut it down? I don't know why exactly they did, but maybe some things hit a little too close to home. As the day before it was shut down, Cranky Vince tweeted something about Alberto Del Rio asking for his release. And there's been a few news items over the past few months that this Twitter account has actually kind of said in this Cranky Vince character that haven't come out until, you know, a few days or even weeks later. So I think that this account is on the inside of WWE, and it got shut down this week on Twitter, but it got replaced by something that was already going on at Premium Vince. And Premium Vince is basically just the new Cranky Vince, in case you were looking for him. But and I thought that was interesting, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, he says on Twitter that Alberto Del Rio asked for his release, and then the Twitter account gets shut down the next day. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Del Rio maybe asked for his release or isn't entirely happy with his career right now.
You know, to me, it's not too far-fetched to believe that this Cranky Vince account could maybe be an inspiration for a new direction on Vince McMahon's character. Perhaps they saw how many followers this had and that it was something that was entertaining, and they said, hey, well, why not? Why don't we have the real Vince McMahon come back to TV and adopt this persona? Clearly, there's some elements to it that reflect on who the real Vince is. So, you know, why not just accentuate that and make it into something entertaining? If the Cranky Vince character is good enough to get over online, which now everything's moving towards online and social media, then, you know, why not put a character like that? Why not make Vince Cranky Vince on TV? I'm all for it.
I like it too. I think it's hilarious, and I think that.
But now, tell me more about this Del Rio release, because I hadn't gotten the word about it. I know that he suffered an injury because he hit his head on the WWE sign or something.
Right.
On SmackDown,
they tried to
pass it off as Great Khali chopping him.
Yeah, and but, I watched that again, where he apparently hit his head on the SmackDown sign and Sheamus threw him into it. The WWE logo there on the stage. I don't know if, I mean, it didn't really look like he got concussed there. It didn't really look like he hit it that hard. So I don't know if Sheamus, I don't know if Del Rio actually hit his head on the thing, on the WWE sign and injured himself that way. It didn't look like he got himself hurt doing that. I'm not really sure, but, you know, there have been rumors that Del Rio maybe has asked for his release. There have also been rumors that the WWE may be worried about Del Rio, thinking that he's injury-prone. So I kind of wonder where Alberto Del Rio will go. I hope he sticks around, because I think he's a great talent, and I wouldn't want to see him leave the WWE.
Well, if he were to leave, all that would mean is that, you know, that'd be another heel, main event level heel that's out right now, much like Chris Jericho, who is under suspension. And, you know, when they have to really settle for someone like Dolph Ziggler going into a main event against Sheamus, it just shows that there is a serious need for main event level heels in the WWE right now. So to lose Alberto Del Rio, that would actually be, it'd be pretty bad for them, almost catastrophic. I think Del Rio was the beneficiary of Jericho being gone and just, you know, the general lack of main event heels, Mark Henry being, you know, stuck in limbo somewhere too. There's just not a lot of main event heels, and Del Rio, I think, was given a spot at that level. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but I don't think he would be in that spot if certain other people were there. So if they lose him too, to me, you know, that might confirm one of my greatest fears that they may have to push The Miz again, because who else can they put in that spot?
Oh, come on. There's got to be somebody. There's got to be somebody.
Let's put our heads together, B2, and, you know, figure out something, because I don't know who else they would have other than Miz. It's like, are you going to elevate Jack Swagger? You know, I think Miz has still been, you know, a higher profile than Jack Swagger. Tensei is on his way down. You know, I think right now Miz is just not appearing on TV because they realize what a failure he is, and they're trying to come up with some type of a different angle for him. I think that we're not too far off from Miz coming back as a babyface, because we've yet to see that in his entire run. And it's something I've been thinking about, and I think that that's what they have to do next with Miz if they want to keep him around and not release him. They have to at least try him out as a babyface. And I dare say, I think the Miz could actually achieve more success and be better if he were a face. I think if he would become a face and stop cutting those lame promos where he tries to sound like he's dangerous and it comes off sounding like a robotic Randy Orton Mach 2, I think he could have more success.
I don't want to see it. I don't want to see him at all. I just don't want to see
him
at all.
No, but I mean, objectively speaking, I think he at least deserves a run as a babyface if before they release him. I think they should try it out. It's never been done. I think he'd actually be better off as a babyface. It would give him the chance to maybe display that he's a better wrestler than what he's shown. And, you know, it'll be something new and fresh for Mike Mizanin to try and do.
I think you got to elevate Jack Swagger at some point. Make him a bigger heel, because clearly, you know, you're talking about heels, that they need more guys. Bringing in Dolph Ziggler at this point to wrestle Sheamus, I like Dolph Ziggler. I think he's very good, but I don't believe that he's going to win the World Heavyweight title. And I just saw Dolph Ziggler lose to Sheamus last week twice. He lost to him on SmackDown last week. He lost to him on Raw last week. I mean, I don't believe that Ziggler is going to beat Sheamus, but if you look around at the roster, they really had nobody else at this time to throw into the match with Sheamus and have it make any sense, unless you want to throw Tensai in there. I think that they could have had Tensai do it, you know, have him beat Sheamus somehow on Raw, which I thought that match was awesome. Tensai and Sheamus this week was just fantastic. I thought it was the best match that we saw on the entire Monday Night Raw. Tensai got a lot of over on Sheamus. I think it was Tensai's best match in the WWE. I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
Well, I think they listened to our program where we said that Sheamus needs to be fighting heels that are going to put him in danger, that are bigger and more threatening than him,
yep,
and can bring a fight. I would have rather seen that as a pay-per-view match. Why not have Tensai against Sheamus? I don't want to see Dolph Ziggler against Sheamus again. And I got to give it to, you know, our other broadcast colleague, the Big Tuna, Kevin McHugh. I had a conversation with him Monday after Raw where we discussed what happened, and he made a great point about Dolph Ziggler. It's like, how are we supposed to take him seriously when not only does he lose twice to Sheamus 2 weeks ago, but also when he goes in and fights the Funkasaurus and is not allowed to get in any kind of significant offense that's going to damage him, yet Miz goes in and wrestles Funkasaurus and dominates the entire match. Granted, Miz lost, but he still dominated the whole match and was made to look, you know, somewhat good against him, whereas Ziggler was made to look like utter caca against Funkasaurus, yet now he gets a world title shot. It's like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is booking with some of these decisions. I don't get it. If it were up to me, I'd have just called off the Chris Jericho suspension and have him come in and go after Sheamus. I think that would have made the most sense. You know, I don't want to get off this topic. I'll get back to Jericho. What do you think of that?
I would love that. I would love to see that. I would love to see Jericho come back from suspension and face Sheamus. You know, you need the top level heels. You know, I bet they're regretting that they suspended Chris Jericho for 30 days. It was a stupid move, and, you know, it would have been great to have him wrestle Sheamus for the title. It would have made tons of sense, but unfortunately, they can't do that because he's still got another 7 days left on his suspension.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Now, I wanted to say this about Chris Jericho. This is a point that, you know, no one on the shows have made, and it's something that bothers me about the Jericho suspension, and that is the fact that Chris Jericho is the consummate Iron Man for the WWE. Chris Jericho has never missed a show due to injury. He's in his entire run, he has never missed an event for any reason. And the fact that they would suspend him, they would prevent him from doing what he's done since the start of his tenure in the WWE without fail, without ever deciding, oh, you know, I'm a little sore, I'm going to stay home, I'm not going to wrestle, I'm not going to show up, I'm going on the injured list to, you know, collect money under false pretense. He's always shown up. So the fact that they would have him stay at home and put him under a suspension for something that, for something that other people have gotten away with even worse atrocities, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth that they would do that. And, you know, it's good. I'm glad to see that there is such a lack of main event heels that they are regretting what they did to Chris Jericho.
They should. It was a stupid move to suspend him. And I miss Jericho. You know, I don't miss Randy Orton having him on suspension. I don't miss him. There's nothing.
You're not alone. I don't really miss him either, really.
And you look at the past, you know, on Randy Orton, by the way, I was thinking about this week. You look at the past couple WrestleManias, it's never been, oh, well, we have this big match and this works perfectly for Randy, we're going to do this with Randy. It's always like, well, who can we put up against Randy? This year it was Kane. Last year it was CM Punk. And it was just kind of thrown together. They have to find things for Randy Orton to do.
Then it was Legacy before that.
You don't need them. You're always trying to find things. They're forcing the issue so much with Randy, where other guys, things just kind of happen and they make sense.
The only meaningful match I can think of that Orton was involved in a WrestleMania, in the later years, like, of course, him against Taker was meaningful. But other than that, I would say his match with Triple H was the most meaningful match of Orton's career.
Yeah.
And a match that realistically Orton should have won the way everything had gone, and Triple H cutting a promo saying, if you don't beat me, you know, all you'll ever be is that punk kid carrying my bags and riding my coattails. And then Triple H goes on to win the match and perfectly justify the point that it's just because Orton can make Triple H look good. He's essentially Triple H's glorified job boy. He's the Stevie Richards to Triple H's Raven, more or less.
Yep.
And
exactly.
It's only, if you notice, only when Triple H is out and not there does Randy have a little bit of spotlight on his own. But the means to the ends of Randy in the main event scene, WWE has for the most part been to put over Triple H.
And why not? Speaking of Triple H, he's going to make some sort of announcement tomorrow night on the pay-per-view about Brock Lesnar, make some sort of thing. So I guess this is the beginning of the build-up to Brock Triple H, hopefully at SummerSlam. You know, Vince McMahon mentioning Brock Lesnar this week on Raw, saying, aren't you the one that hired Brock Lesnar? And kind of said that was like a negative for Johnny Ace, so I could maybe see Brock Lesnar coming back and Vince being on Triple H's side in that one, as Vince talking about Brock seeming to be not too positive about him coming back into the WWE. I look forward to seeing Brock in there. And you know, there are still marks in the MMA world, Prophet. I don't know if you're aware of this, but marks are being led to believe that Brock Lesnar may be coming back to the UFC or fighting again. And they're also being led to believe that this whole storyline with the WWE is real, and people in the WWE don't know if Brock Lesnar is going to come back and work again. People are actually believing this in the MMA world, so I have to go on the MMA show and explain to them that, you know, he's signed to the WWE and this is just a storyline. But people are believing this in the MMA world, mostly because of certain guys that have newsletters that they're trying to sell, spreading WWE propaganda.
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me, but I think that at the end of all this, there is a good working relationship between the UFC and the WWE, because they know that Brock Lesnar is attracting viewers to both. Fans of UFC who saw Brock Lesnar and didn't know him from a hole in the head when he was WWE champion are going to tune in to see how he does in the entertainment wrestling world. And fans of WWE, you know, are going to tune in to watch MMA because now they are aware of it because, oh, Brock Lesnar went to this UFC place. Oh, let's check that out.
Yeah, but, you know, but Brock Lesnar is no longer in the UFC, and he was at UFC 146 in Vegas, and I think that maybe he was trying to use the UFC and maybe even use Dana White as part of his storyline with the WWE. As Dana White said, he had a meeting with Brock Lesnar, and he doesn't want to go into all the details, but it didn't go very well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think Dana White is kayfabing. Yeah, I think he's maybe helping Brock in the storyline. He's either helping him or helping him without knowing it, but just Dana White talking about Brock Lesnar is good for the WWE storyline.
Either way, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Lesnar make an appearance at No Way Out. I was actually thinking about it and looking at how all pieces are falling into place, and I, for one, think that the Big Show will defeat John Cena tomorrow at No Way Out, and I think that I see the beginning of a new stable forming with John Laurinaitis. I think he might have his own version of the corporation that's beginning to form, because if you look, there are a ton of wrestlers that are associated with John Laurinaitis, but there's no actual group. They all just kind of, you know, show up at his beck and call. I mean, talking about Tensei, talking about David Otunga, The Big Show, Brock Lesnar. I could see any number of those guys getting involved in that match, more so Lesnar. And I could see them putting together some type of stable like that for Laurinaitis, because realistically, I don't think they'll fire John Laurinaitis. I think that that would just be too simple of a payoff that Cena beats The Big Show. And plus, Big Show is just starting on this heel run, so, you know, why not give him some time to grow as a character?
But the stipulation of this match is if Big Show loses, Laurinaitis is fired. If Cena loses, he's fired. So do you think maybe John Cena loses this match and then takes that time off that he was talking about after Extreme Rules? Maybe now he takes time off
to...
Yeah, exactly.
And also, there's the fact that... Doesn't Cena get fired every year around this time?
Yeah, well, maybe he's just taking a break. You know, and Vince McMahon...
Last year, Vince wanted to fire him. Which Vince is suddenly back, and now, you know, he has his man crush on Cena. Yet last year he wanted to fire him along with John Laurinaitis. You know, if Vince turns tomorrow, it'll be the most obvious turn, I think, ever in the history of wrestling.
You think he'll turn on who, Cena?
It would be logical, considering that he wanted to fire him last year. And then because of that decision, Vince was sent home. That also involved Triple H. So why has Vince suddenly just come back and, you know, changed his opinion?
I don't know. Well, I don't think that, you know, I think it would make sense for Vince to, you know, defend Triple H a little bit and not, you know, not want Brock Lesnar involved.
Triple H is the one who sent him home. Triple H is the one who, you know, went out and told him that he's been relieved of his duties as taking care of the day-to-day operations of the company.
Yeah, but didn't he bring him back somehow? How is Vince, like, involved? I don't understand. He's a special consultant?
When did this happen? He's still the chairman of the board. He just doesn't oversee the day-to-day events. He's technically not on the road. But even though he is, in real life, story-wise, he's not on the road. He's not a matchmaker, booker, commissioner figure, person that can oversee and veto decisions at the actual shows. He's still the boss of the company. It didn't make a lot of sense when they got rid of him. They never explained that, but if you know the terms and whatnot, then that's essentially what they were trying to get across.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It doesn't, and that's why I say, what motivation does Vince have to suddenly support Cena? What reason does he have to hate John Laurinaitis? To me, it just seems like it's going to come full circle that, you know, Vince is in cahoots with Laurinaitis and Lesnar, and, you know, Triple H is going to have to play the good authority figure against Laurinaitis and Vince.
That would be interesting. It would be interesting.
It's very predictable. Maybe everyone else doesn't see it. I mean, I just see that that's how it would probably play out, and then they would form this type of corporation with Laurinaitis, with Tensei, and with Big Show, and with Lesnar. And it kind of makes sense, too, since, like, you know, Tensei and Big Show were part of Team Lesnar back in the day.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. I would like to see that. You know, there's also, I read something where Vince maybe would side with Triple H against Johnny Ace and Brock Lesnar or something, but I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I definitely want to see it. I'm looking forward to the pay-per-view.
The key to every angle involving Vince is that it was him all along, just like the higher power.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. How about the rest of this pay-per-view tomorrow night? CM Punk, Kane, Daniel Bryan. I think the build-up to this match has been very, very interesting. I think AJ's done a hell of a job. She can cut a promo. She's doing everything. And, you know, it was kind of weird. Punk and AJ in a tag match against Kane and Daniel Bryan. AJ accidentally gets tagged in. She skips around Kane, then jumps on him and starts kissing him. Kane leaves the ring all weird. I think AJ's doing a good job, though. I like this storyline, and still, I think that AJ is just doing all this to fake out CM Punk and fake out Kane, and she's really just doing it to get Daniel Bryan back.
It would make a lot of sense, but, I mean, the way I see it, like, I was talking with a friend of mine at the gym, and he was saying, you know, what do you think AJ is going to do? What would you like to see her do? Which one should she side with? And I said, for me, the most interesting would be is if she sided with Kane, because Kane, they've just done so much with his character that there's nothing left for Kane to do. Daniel Bryan can stand on his own. CM Punk is going to walk out of their WWE champion. You know, give her to Kane. Let them do something that's different, because Kane is really stale right now. But all that aside, I got to say about AJ, you know, I could care less about AJ up until last week, where, you know, something interested me about her. And this week, again, I'm just really taken aback by her acting skills. She's definitely got a talent for, you know, getting emotion across and being believable, whether she's crazy or whether she's in love or sad. Or to me, it was very odd, but somewhere during that segment, AJ suddenly became the most attractive woman to me in the WWE. And, you know, being the shallow person that I am, AJ is very much not my type, but something happened there.
Wow.
And she just became instantly that much more attractive.
Sounds like you fell in love, Prophet.
You know, I don't know. It's there's something about AJ.
Wow. Something about AJ.
There's an infatuation that has come over me, but there's something about AJ.
Prophet also digs crazy chicks, as CM Punk is saying, which I think is terrible.
I wonder if that was a shot at Beth Phoenix.
I think it probably is. So you don't think Daniel Bryan walks out of there champion? I think that there's a possibility. Daniel Bryan doesn't have to beat CM Punk to win the title. He can pin Kane.
I think the promo between him and Vince McMahon indicates to me that they could have an interesting storyline if he were to become WWE champion.
Yeah.
And maybe a face turn. You know, because to me, it seemed like Vince was more of the heel in that segment when he told him, you don't look like a wrestler. If you were carrying a bag of groceries, no one would mistake you for a WWE superstar.
Yeah.
And, you know, that feud seems very interesting, a Daniel Bryan-Vince McMahon feud.
And also, you know, Daniel Bryan, he seemed like maybe the babyface for a split second in his promo with CM Punk this week, where he said that CM Punk, you know, he cut that promo, but since then he's sold out.
I wanted to
amazing.
Talk about that promo, because I think that for the first time, someone put CM Punk in his place.
Yes.
And he did not have the ammunition to fire back.
Yes.
It really seemed like, and I mean, if I watched that over again, and Punk was fumbling on his words, it was becoming like Genesis of McGillicuddy Part 2, after Daniel Bryan said that to Punk.
Bryan got in his face. That was an excellent promo. That was a really very, very interesting promo from Punk and Bryan. And even when Kane came in, it was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, pipe bombs.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan was dropping the pipe bombs. And Punk,
I have to say,
Punk was trying to fight back,
Daniel Bryan won that promo.
Oh, yeah.
He defeated Punk. He said exactly what we've been saying. It's like he listened to our show.
Yeah.
Where we said how Punk, you know, he's sold out. He doesn't do anything edgy anymore. He comes out, he panders. He's, you know, he's like Cena. He's ice cream bar Cena.
And that's what Daniel Bryan said to him. He said he panders to the audience, and he's a sellout, and this and that. That was very, very interesting to see Daniel Bryan come out and say that stuff. It was, you know, it added a whole new element, I think, to this. And, you know, I could see CM Punk turning heel.
He always acted like a heel anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I could see him turning heel and Bryan being the babyface.
I found he did not bring it on Raw or on SmackDown. His promos were just, they were just, you know, John Cena promos, but not really as intense. He was very much Ice Cream Bar Punk in Cruise Control.
Yep.
I did not enjoy it. I thought that Daniel Bryan went after him, and I enjoyed seeing Punk stumble over his words and not know what to say. It was really good to see that for a change.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting, and I thought it was a very, very good promo there.
He was starting to sound like The Rock when Cena came out and interrupted him.
Yeah. So I would like to see Daniel Bryan win the WWE title. I think it's possible, and I can't wait for that match. I think it's going to be fantastic. That's the match that's really selling this for me. Also a match that's selling it for me, Santino Marella against Ricardo Rodriguez in a non-title tuxedo match. That's going to be fantastic. Ricardo Rodriguez is amazing. The guy is hilarious, and so is Santino. They're the two funniest guys in the WWE. Their SmackDown match a couple weeks ago was very, very funny. I have very high hopes for this. I think it's going to be a comedy wrestling classic.
I think so, too. And Ricardo Rodriguez, he is one of the main guys that every time he's on screen and given a prominent role, he always manages to find a way of making me laugh out loud. And so, along with Santino, that match, it's going to be a treat for a lot of people. And, you know, people can say, oh, it's devaluating the U.S. title, or, you know, they want to see wrestling. It's like, look, you know, you're going to get so many other matches that are going to be wrestling. You're going to get Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, and Kane. You're going to get Christian against Cody Rhodes. You know, there's a lot of stuff. You're going to get Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler. There's enough wrestling on there. You know, you need some diversity. You can't go see the circus and you know, everyone's a lion tamer or everyone's an acrobat. You know, you need some clowns in there, too. So I, for one, fully support them doing this match, and I think it's going to be outstanding.
I think it's going to be very, very funny. I just can't wait. You know, speaking of wrestling matches, we will see Christian defend the Intercontinental title against Cody Rhodes. I think it could be all right, but I'm kind of over this Christian-Cody Rhodes thing. I want to see Christian move on to something else. Cody Rhodes, I don't know. He's just not doing it.
I don't think Cody Rhodes is that great. I don't think he's that talented. I think that once Randy Orton does get released, I think Cody Rhodes is going to be our next target on this show, unless Wade Barrett comes back. But even at that, you know, it's tough to say. I think Wade Barrett may have more talent than Cody Rhodes. You know, not really interested to see it. They had a great match at Over the Limit, and I don't know what they're going to show anymore. This time it'll probably just be Christian beating him with a frog splash instead of a kill switch. I more enjoy seeing Christian against newer opponents. I thought his match with Swagger on SmackDown was really entertaining. I thought that the Fatal 4-Way was made into an amazing match because of Christian.
Yeah.
And because of how much the crowd is behind him. You know, I still say it doesn't hurt that Randy Orton is out, because Christian could easily fill the same void left by Orton. He could get that same kind of push, be that same kind of upper mid-card main event guy that Randy Orton was, and with more talent. I've said it for the past couple of weeks now, and I'll say it again. Right now, Christian is the best in the world. You know, if Punk's going to call himself best in the world, he's got to step up his game to catch up to Christian. And Chris Jericho, since coming back, has not really been the same. I don't doubt, you know, there was a time Chris Jericho was the best in the world. But, you know, maybe it's the back injury, maybe it's the politics, but Jericho has not consistently delivered as expected. And I'd say right now, the one guy who delivers every time he steps into that ring, every time he's on screen, I want to see his match. He could be fighting anybody. I want to see his match, and that's Christian. This guy is, you know, he's very, to me, reminiscent of what Shawn Michaels was, you know, towards the end of his career. As that just great baby face that had great competitive matches with everybody and made you want to see him win. You know, Christian's really in a class apart. You know, he's there with the Rey Mysterios and the John Cenas and the upper echelon of the WWE's active roster. And I think this run, I think Christian should have been a baby face a long time ago. And now that he's finally able to do it, I think we're seeing the best of Christian. And hopefully, you know, another world title reign. It's good that he's Intercontinental Champion, but another world title, WWE title reign, should be around the corner for him.
I think Christian is amazing. I think he's really, really good. And I'd say, yeah, I mean, best in the world. I would say Daniel Bryan, right now, in my opinion, for my money, he would be the guy that I look forward to seeing most right now in all of professional wrestling, but Christian is right up there, maybe number two or number three as far as best in the world. Christian's definitely awesome.
Those two should have a match. I mean, as far as I know, I don't know if those two have wrestled each other in a one-on-one match.
No.
I know they haven't had a feud or a program together.
Wow.
I think that's something that WWE should build towards.
Hey, if Daniel Bryan doesn't win the WWE title, I wouldn't mind seeing him challenge for the Intercontinental title.
I think Christian should drop the Intercontinental title, not to Cody Rhodes.
Maybe to Daniel Bryan. It'd be interesting.
Maybe,
it'd be an interesting feud. You know, he could drop the Intercontinental to Daniel Bryan and then move on and challenge for the world title.
I still think it's a step down for Daniel Bryan to be Intercontinental champion. I think that belt should be used to elevate someone else from the mid-card.
Yeah.
But, I wouldn't like to see it. I think Daniel Bryan deserves to stay at a main event level.
I think he should be WWE champion.
Well, it could happen, you know, but Christian could. I think he should drop the Intercontinental title to someone that he can elevate, kind of like how he elevated, he elevated Ezekiel Jackson towards the end of ECW. He could do the same thing with the Intercontinental title and then move on to challenge for the world or WWE title. I'd love to see him get his revenge on CM Punk. I still think that, I have a theory on that, man. I didn't get to talk to you off air about this, but I'm going to throw out my theory as to what happened with Christian. Because remember we had talked about it, you and I, why did they pull him off of Mania?
Yeah.
You know, we talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
And, I don't really like going on air and just, you know, throwing out things and running it by you, but this is one that I got to run by. If it's you know, too much of a conspiracy theory, whatever, we can pretend I never said it. But my theory on this is that we saw Christian come back the week before Mania, and then Christian had that match with CM Punk, and they said he re-aggravated injuries, and he won't be able to go to WrestleMania. Now, to me, I said, look, it's a 6-on-6 tag match. Punk did the damage to Christian, but you could have easily had Christian stand on the apron, go in, do a reverse DDT, tag out. That's all he does. He gets beyond Mania, gets his bonus, etc. But he was pulled and, you know, then brought back later on. Only with what Christian did this past week, going to TNA's Slammiversary pay-per-view, did I start to think, and I really believe that the deal to have Christian appear on TNA was pre-decided when WWE got Ric Flair. And they said they would give TNA someone in exchange, and TNA wanted Christian.
Yeah.
I think WWE, knowing that, they decided to pull Christian off of television, even though he was ready to go. I think they decided to pull him off of television so that he wouldn't have any momentum when he showed up on TNA television. I don't think a definitive date was set for TNA, so I think it got to a point where WWE was keeping Christian off of TV for too long and said, well, look, we have him sitting at home. You know, he's losing out on money. He lost out on the WrestleMania bonus and everything. Why should we pay him to stay at home? Let's bring him back. They brought him back. They hot-shotted the Intercontinental title on him to help him make back some of the money he lost from not being on Mania. And then TNA, seeing that, said, okay, well, he's on TV. He's getting a push. Okay, we're going to cash in on when we can bring him in. We're going to bring him in right now.
Yeah, that's possible.
Now,
it's an interesting theory. Yeah.
But to me, that's what it seems like. And I think the Intercontinental title was the way of saying, you know, we screwed you out of your WrestleMania bonus, but we'll give you a nice run here, and you'll be able to make even more money. And TNA, then seeing him back on TV, said, okay, you guys made your move. You put him on TV. You gave him some momentum. We're going to bring him in now.
And all he did really was, on Slammiversary, was thank the fans and introduce a video clip of the number one moment in TNA's 10-year history. And he really didn't do very much on Slammiversary, in case you were wondering. Prophet, running out of time here on the show. We went a little bit overtime on TSN 990. A couple of things I wanted to run by you on Raw this week. Big Show, Kofi Kingston in a steel cage match. I think that's exactly how Big Show should be booked. He just dominated him and walked out of the cage. I thought that was pretty cool.
Now, I disagree. I watched that, and for me, that was one of the lowest points of Raw, because that match was way too long.
Yes, it was too long, but I liked the finish. I liked how he just beat the hell out of Kofi and then left. It was
like, I think, first of all, they should have had him demolish Kofi. I think it should have been in a cage. He should have brutalized Kofi for about 2-3 minutes, not even that long. Bump him into the cage a few times, you know. Big Show made many pin attempts, and to me, it looked like he had difficulty putting away Kofi, who was you know, a low mid-card guy. Kofi's role in WWE would be defined as exactly mid-card. Yeah. He's not high mid-card. He's not low mid-card. He's mid-card. And it took Big Show 8 minutes, 9 minutes to beat Kofi Kingston.
Yeah.
How can Big Show beat John Cena in a cage when it took him that long to beat Kofi? If I were booking that match, it would have been 3 minutes long. Kofi would not have booked Big Show, and that would have been it. And then people would have been like, well, I was expecting to see Big Show just demolish him and say, hey, this is a new Big Show. What did I see? I saw same old, lazy Big Show that has a competitive match with a mid-card guy when he's going into a main event against Cena. How are we supposed to take him seriously? That's what I saw, and for me, that was the lowest point of Raw.
Wow. But I like the finish, though. I mean, because usually in these steel cage matches, you see, you know, a little bit of a struggle and different things happening, but it got to a point where Big Show was just beating him up, and then he just walked away. It was a cool way to end it.
The match was too competitive, and yeah. The ending, it's the match realistically should have been 3 minutes long.
They're trying to keep Kofi at a certain level, you know? They're trying to keep, and, you know, he's tag team champion. You can't just have him lose in 2 minutes. Yeah, he loses in 2 minutes, though,
okay.
And it really devalues
him. Hold on a second. But by that same logic, so R-Truth wrestles Tensei.
Yeah.
And does a job in two minutes.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. It's not consistent. It's not consistent. Speaking of jobbers, is there a bigger jobber in the WWE than Heath Slater? The guy did a job to Vader this week. Vader!
It was a good match.
Was it?
I found it was a good match. It almost seemed like they probably wanted Vader to go in and do something quick, but then with the reaction that he got, they decided to have him do a little bit more. You know, I don't dislike Heath Slater. I think he is a big jobber right now, but I think he's about, you know, a good gimmick tweak away from actually being, you know, being something. I think he needs a Jeff Jarrett light-up suit and a guitar, and then he can actually be something. But he's different. He's different looking, and he has an odd charisma to him.
Yeah,
I enjoyed seeing Vader come back, and to me it looked like that. Like, Vader probably thought this could be his last match ever in the WWE. So, you know, why not make it good and go out with a bang?
It probably was.
Because if not, the last memory people would remember of Vader is him, you know, falling on his rear end after attacking Batista.
Yeah, him and Goldust doing that run-in on Batista. That made no sense.
Yeah. No, it didn't. Goldust and Vader. Wow. That was... I enjoyed it, though. It was a pleasant little thing.
Why
and
not?
Heath Slater didn't even...
It was good. It was good to see Vader. I like Vader.
Yeah. And Heath Slater did another job to the Funkasaurus over on SmackDown.
Of course he did. But then the Funkasaurus was attacked by David Otunga, and they'll be wrestling in the free pre-show match tomorrow night before No Way Out around 7:30, I think, on YouTube, the WWE's YouTube channel. Brodus and Otunga.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really looking forward to it that much.
No.
I think Brodus is going to win, and I think eventually once Big Show is done with Cena, I think he's going to move on to feuding with Brodus Clay. And he probably will hand Brodus his first defeat, but it'll be a good test for Brodus Clay, and I'll be glad to see that.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what will happen tomorrow night. No Way Out. Any other matches we haven't got to? Beth Phoenix for the Divas title. Thoughts?
I think Layla will retain and eventually go on to feud with Eve Torres. I think that'll be the next program for her. Right now, I think if they go with my idea and they give Laurinaitis his corporation, Eve Torres will be part of that. So, you know, I'm sure he'd give her favorable treatment and give her a title match. And she has enough heat. You know, they still chant Hoski at her. So.
That would make a lot of sense. I would like to see that.
I think that'll be the next program. I think that'll be either Money in the Bank or SummerSlam. It'll be Eve Torres and Layla.
So I'll tell you what, Prophet, we're going to take a short commercial break here on the radio side on TSN 990, and we're going to come back with Jason Rumble. Before we wrap this show up, we'll hear from our buddy Jason Rumble. This is Wrestling Uncensored here on TSN 990. I am Dave Simon. He is Jeremy Prophet. We come back with Jason Rumble. Stay with us. Like my drink, the fuck you think? I don't go with no hand me down. See if you fuck then it's after me. You know how much I'ma make it work. You know her trust living in her purse. When you discuss your love for lust, just make sure you visit here first, Cali. You might catch me in Atlanta looking like.
Yo, maniacs, Hulk Hogan here, and you're listening to Ringside Report Radio, the only thing to listen to. So what you gonna do when Ringside runs wild on you, brother?
It's the innovator of violence, the extreme original, Tommy Dreamer, and you're listening to Wrestling Uncensored.
You're listening to the Ringside Report with AJ Styles, the phenomenal one.
Ain't no love lost when the bullets get tossed, and you know it's all fair in love and war. How your man say you fan, but even off your broad. You run around contemplating knocking you off. How your neck got papers, all is worth fire.
Welcome back. This is Wrestling Uncensored. Dave Simon and Jeremy Prophet with you. Now welcoming our friend over from Boston, Massachusetts, Mr. Jason Rumble. Jason was at the SmackDown show this past week and is a professional wrestler. He's been wrestling for a while all over the Northeast. Jason, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. And if I do so myself, I have no problem on, how we say, putting myself over. So I'll just give your airwaves a little bit of my credentials. 15 years in the business, trained by the legendary Walter Killer Kowalski. I'm a three-time NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. I've been to England. I've been all over the great country of Canada. And out of the 50 states of the U.S., I'm proud to say that I've wrestled in 30 out of the 50 states.
Wow.
And yes, it is a true fact that I was at SmackDown on Tuesday evening in Manchester at the Verizon Wireless Center. And I can honestly say I'm one of the guys that out there, that I deal with so much wrestling that when it comes to SmackDown, I'm a DVR type of person with it, and I fast forward through a lot of it. And usually when I tend to watch SmackDown on a Friday night, I hardly ever get through 2 hours with not liking what I see. I tend to just look to see who I know, and see if anything appeases me and interests me. This Tuesday, I can honestly say that one of the opinions are like, you know, rectums, and everyone has one. My honest opinion is if they keep on the angle where they strum things over from Monday night, I believe you can get viewers. I believe the venue that they ran in, the Verizon Wireless Center in New Hampshire. I've had the privilege of being on TNA house shows, TNA tapings in Orlando, and I had told Jeremy earlier this week that there was as many fans in the Verizon Wireless Center as nowadays as you would see, so to speak, in the Impact Zone. Whatever they do on camera or how they do their camera to put it over on TV, because I did honestly watch a little bit last night via DVR just to see what the place looked like, because I know what it looked like in my mind. And I will tell you this, one part of the oval didn't even have fans in it. It was all blacked out, and it's amazing how they're able to keep that out of hindsight to the viewer.
Yeah, I mean, the WWE, they really got some great production values. Now you said a lot there, Jason. I want to backtrack just a little bit. Talk a little bit about Killer Kowalski breaking into the business and what that was like. I mean, just a great legend. It must have been a great experience for you.
It was. I'm a graduate of Marlin High School, 1992, and that is the city that Walter housed the school known as Walter Killer Kowalski School of Professional Wrestling. And little to my knowledge did I know that I actually walked by this place 5 days a week, home from high school, and never knew that this place realistically was there. I always knew about Richard Burns, who was the Tung Soo Do type of karate guy with the wrestling school was shared with. Richard was a famous guy around the area. If you were looking to take karate, you went to him. But I never knew it was there. I had been an avid wrestling fan my whole life. I'd say my first live world champion watching was Bob Backlund. I seen Bob Backlund for at least 2 years defend the title every month. He is what you truly can call in the sport of professional wrestling the lost art. is a definite Iron Man. This guy went 45 minutes to an hour each time he defended the title. I know that I come off the backtrack, but to route on how I, of how much of a dream it was for me to go to Walters. I seen people he trained like Big John Studd early on, Mike Shaw. I went to local high school events where he would still dress as Killer Kowalski under the Purple Hood, and Bedlam from Boston. He produced his own students. It was an hour show on the local channel every Sunday at noontime. So when you came home from church, he was on your he was on your TV. There's a tag team that, you know, stuck through my mind. They were known as Tony Ulysses and Grant. And I had the proud honor of one of the characters of local stature, Tony Ulysses, who faced Ric Flair in his home country for the World Heavyweight title. He was one of my managers at one time. So just going through Walters, going up the stairs, leading to him, being the height I am, to see this man 6'7", he shakes your hand, and his hand is literally, his hand is like, both hands are like claws. They were like stuck in claw form, no lie. And when in like your hand like perfectly fit into like his hand. Wow. It, amazing. So like one of the most intimidating one of the most intimidating man I met ever. One of the most intimidating days of my life walking into his school, without a doubt. The one thing that made me comfortable was after I gave him my money, he put his arm around me and he looked at me with all seriousness, and he told me to picture that I was 6'7", 302 pounds, and never let anybody tell me different. And
how tall are you?
I'm an overrated 5'7½" if I'm lucky.
has that been tough for you in wrestling? I mean, obviously, you know, a giant's business, but there are some guys that have been able to do it, right?
I would honestly say I think the biggest thing for me being the short guy in the business is having heroes who are shorter guys in the business, such as Kevin Sullivan and Taz, and a lot of it is taking the mind and mentality from Walter Killer Kowalski and believing in this game that it's you make them believe it's for real. If you're in a fight, you're going to fight back. So I believe what I try to bring to the ring is it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. No matter whether or not I'm heel or face, love me, hate me, I kind of bring the same game every night when I hit the ring. So to me, it's real in a certain aspect, man, you know.
But you were you were involved in athletics before, right? You played football when you were younger.
Five years semi-pro football. I went through the high school ranks, played Pop Warner football. I had letters to go to the NFL Combine, the CFL, arena football. So, yes, I've been an athletic person my whole life.
Did the XFL come calling, too?
Yes, they did. I actually had the honor and privilege of training with Hall of Famer Jimmy Superfly Snook, as one of his sons, who is a graduate of Harvard University. His name is Kane, pronounced properly in island language would be Kane Waller. And Kane was, I believe, a graduate in year 2000, I believe. Kane graduated from Harvard. He was an all-Ivy cornerback. And Kane and I trained together. Kane ended up tearing a hamstring, and the visions of making it with a friend and putting a goal forth, it kind of went up in smoke, but at the same time, I was able to put more of my concerted energy and efforts into professional wrestling.
Did you always want to be a wrestler, or was it football more?
It was flip-flop. I pictured playing football on Sunday and wrestling on Friday nights. So it was always a thing. I was the kid in the neighborhood that was always the wacky kid that stayed until Saturday morning wrestling was over. When pay-per-views became famous, people didn't even know what it was that was on TV. I remember seeing WrestleMania 1, Boston Garden, closed-circuit television. It was an overrated four-sided movie screen, and I sat in the Boston Garden to watch it. So I was one of definitely many fans that night that did a quirky but yet crazy thing for the sport, but wrestling's always been a passion of mine, whether or not it was football or wrestling. I always knew from the start that I wanted to do something in the business. I guess I was always that person that didn't mind being not so more or less in school notice to be the class clown, but when it came time for entertaining and you had popularity, like the popular type of evening where it was a talent show, I had no problem being involved.
Now, you talked about some of the guys that you like watching, some of the guys that you know that are in the WWE. Who are some of those guys that you like to watch and that you're friends with?
I got the right now in the WWE, I enjoy watching Randy Orton. Not that he's not a friend of mine in any way, but I enjoy the way he does things in the ring. I like his psychology, the way he sells. I tend to watch Daniel Bryan and CM Punk because early on in my career through Jersey Championship Wrestling, those were some of the guys that were on the same cards as me. Kofi Kingston, because Kofi came from up around this area, and I had the honor of having him on a couple of the shows that I promoted. TNA-wise, I do tend to watch out for Frankie Kazarian. Kazarian and I, he came up here all the way from California to train with Walter, and him and his buddy lived out of the back of a car to go after their goal. So, Frankie's been a good friend of mine throughout the years. I had the honor of working a good angle with AJ Styles, so I tend to follow AJ. Christopher Daniels, I've had I was probably drunk along with the black Nature Boy Scoot Andrews, while Christopher Daniels was a straight edge type of guy down in the Florida area. So Chris Daniels and I, pretty good type of friends. I enjoy watching some of those guys to see what they do, see what they're up to. I can't say obviously when you get into this business, anybody who's going to fool you and say they weren't a mock to begin with is bullshit. I still buy tickets. I still go to live events. I was saying that one of the things I said to Jeremy the other day was 15 years in the business, I've had 7 opportunities with total nonstop action. Back in 2004 or 5 when they were doing the Master Lock Challenge, I had the honor and privilege of being booked at the TD Bank North Garden. I got to work out with all the guys, my picture taken, the whole 9 yards, eat a great spread, and get paid $250 cash, when nowadays they wait for a check in the mail.
What was the food like? Not to interrupt you, but what?
The food was awesome, dude. Yeah. There is nothing like WWE catered food, man. I ate so much that day.
Really?
It was awesome because I was in an elevator with Lord Steven Regal, and popping in comes Tajiri, and I have a cool story with Tajiri and Super Crazy back in the ECW days when I had some friends there, and we would go and we would partake in some funny legal things, and Tajiri partaked in some funny legal things that happened that evening with myself involved. And when he came into the elevator, he looked at me and not only double take but triple take, and then scratched his brain and was like, "I know you." And I told him where he knew me from, and he just looked at me and said, "We'll keep quiet about that." And we just proceeded to go up the elevator, and I went upon my way. But that was such an awesome, untimely thing. Getting to get my one day in the sun, that was awesome. If they were to call me now, 15 years in, I own my own wrestling school. Per se, there's another wrestling school in this area. where I am in New England, and their head trainer got to go out and do a job against Ryback. 15 years I've been in it. Everybody knows in that crowd that if they see me walk out there, I am not beating Ryback. You don't have to give me a fake name. Let me be who I want to be. I earned that. I at least believe I earned that opportunity to get my ass kicked, being my own fucking name. And excuse my French, but my own name. And I believe it's good for my business. Because now, when I'm able to say, watch me get my ass handed to me on SmackDown this Friday, I mean, you know, it just, after 15 years, I at least, if I was to do that, I earned that.
Yeah, I mean,
for
sure.
To have my name. These guys go, now this is a business standpoint too. You're in business. You're a head trainer of a school, and they give you the name of Ari something. I don't know what the last name was, but it was Ari
something.
Ari
Cohen.
It wasn't that. Yeah, at first I thought it was Ari Gold from Entourage, one of my favorite shows. And then, you know, the other individual out there with him that night was Ilya Markopoulos. Right now I'm involved in an angle with Ilya through NECW. He's a hell of a worker. He's 18 years old, just graduated high school. At least those two guys to go out there against Ryback that evening, the fans might say, he might take this guy off their feet. The two guys the night before shouldn't even have been out there. That's automatically telling the thing, you know what I mean? And then to give these guys stick time, I cannot believe it. Wow. Like, unless those two guys were worthy of y'all going to hire them, why do they deserve 60 seconds of airtime on your television, especially talking?
And it's not like anybody watching at home wants to see that promo. Like, and they've been doing it every week, right? Every week,
yeah, exactly.
The guys come out, they cut the little promo, it sucks, Ryback does the same thing, beats them up, gives them the double muscle buster, says feed me more, walks out, and that's it. And also the fans are chanting Goldberg while all of this is happening,
exactly.
By the way.
Get back to this, because a lot of his moves were invented on me at Walter Killer Kowalski's, his Lord Tanzai, known to me as Baldo, because of the New England area, that's how he came up. When he first went to WWE, known as Prince Albert, they used to chant Baldo.
Oh, really?
Baldo. And now that he's back in WWE, he's known as Lord Tanzai, they started calling him Albert.
Yeah.
Well, now from what I guess, he's been sent back down, and now they're going to repackage him. But this is one of the things, from what my understanding, I don't talk to Matt on a daily basis. It was through 17 different grapevines. But from what I was told, the first time Matt had left the WWE was because of they could never figure out what they're going to do with him. But now, to my knowledge, I guess he's signed to a 3-year deal. Unless they say you're fired, you know what I mean? He's locked in.
Yeah.
Matt was a very happy man, from my understanding, on going to Japan and doing his thing. They were very appreciative, and he must have made lucrative dinero off of it, because that's the way he's lived.
How about in the WWE?
I was so psyched when he came back,
right?
Because he's a real looking wrestler.
Oh yeah, and he had a great match with Sheamus on Raw this week. He had just a fantastic match. It was violent, and he got a lot of over on Sheamus, who's the world champion. So I don't know if he's going to be sent down. I mean, he lost the match.
I heard that they were going to send him. This is just from what I heard.
Yeah.
From what I heard, it was posted upon his Facebook.
Really?
That, yes. I'm not sure. You can check this out. I'm not going to credit, but from what I understood, it was on his Facebook. And from when he first came back, he was supposed to get a huge push. And, you know, who knows nowadays? Like Tony Rumble once said to me, wrestling's written in pencil for a certain reason. And this may be one of the certain reasons why wrestling is written in pencil. Because it's never a sure thing.
No, it never is, and I don't think the WWE did him any kind of favors with just bringing him in as Lord Penta.
I must have went to the bathroom after he beat up after him and Sheamus were over. I guess he beat up his manager.
Yeah.
So that would even to me make me think that he's looking at doing something different.
Yeah, I think that they are going to repackage him some way, and I think that they should, because to the WWE audience, nobody explained why he's no longer Albert and why he's Lord Tensei. He never cut a promo. It was never anything.
Promo by Michael Cole.
Yeah. There was nothing. There was nothing to explain what it really happened. He never explained himself, and they have a manager. He's not doing any talking. So they really screwed
him. Managers back. That used to be the old school thing, was to, if you have a guy, the manager's there for the, you know, the talking piece.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing. Vicky Guerrero can't talk to save her life, but she's out there with these guys.
At least she's getting on the mic.
She's out there to be annoying, and she's getting over doing that.
Yeah, and she's talking, and she's doing something, and she's bringing heat to the wrestler, whereas this Sakamoto guy, he does nothing for Tensei. Nothing.
Exactly. Stands there and throws some salt for him. That's about it.
Great.
Yeah. It's like Mr. Fuji. They could have pulled him out of retirement. He would have been. Fuji would have enjoyed that.
I would have enjoyed
that.
That
was the one good thing when Walter was alive. Breaking in the business, I tell a lot of these guys, 15 years ago, the first 2-3 years that I was on shows, there was 6 old-timers always around. Bob Orton, Fuji, Nikolai Volkoff, Tito Santana, Snuka was always around. Bundy. I wrestled Bundy over 25 times. Chris Pett, he used to request me when he was on local shows, and at DC, and I was on it. I used to love work and had no problem.
That sounds like
great guy.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. King Kong Bundy, I mean, he main evented WrestleMania, and that must have been awesome, right?
I used to love getting that when he would ask for 5. I'd be on the bottom marking out, you know what I mean? I'm like, this is King Kong Bundy asking for the 5 count on 183 people. I used to just laugh my balls off, you know. It was awesome, you know. Wrestling, as a Spanish baseball player once said, he probably said, baseball has been very, very good to me. Wrestling has been very good to me. And not so in the pocketbook, but memories and other things that people just cannot take. You can blow through money, you can't blow through memories.
Are you able to get by on wrestling, or are you doing other things?
I try my hardest. Yeah. Let's put it to you that way. Yeah. It's a good thing I have a patient wife. I have a 2-year-old daughter that I'm able to I'm able to stay home with. My wife does a lot as far as the financial status goes. I'm able to pay some of the bills and do what I can and provide with whatever way through my own wrestling school, my promotion, as however many times I get my ass out my door to take bookings that are actually, you know, that actually can do something for you. But you know, the good thing is now I'm right to the age, I'm to the ripe old age of 40. I'm still in decent shape. There's a great thing called managers being used back in professional wrestling. I've always believed that that's one of the things that has always gotten me by, is my gift of gab. I'm just lucky that my brain is able to, my eyes are able to see, my brain is able to compute, and my brain is able to compute that to my hands and or feet to make the stuff in the ring look like it's supposed to. I'm a lucky guy, you know. I'm not saying I'm the greatest. I'm just I'm a lucky son of a bitch. That's all, you know what I mean? And I thank God for giving me giving me whatever it is. You know, I've never been the best in baseball, football, or anything else. I've just been the guy that's been able to get it over.
And
same thing in high school baseball. I could have went to the United States Navy and played in the Navy for baseball right out of high school.
Wow. And why didn't you do that?
I didn't want to really have 3 square meals a day. I didn't mind having them, but the armed forces. I love my country. I loved it, but that's for other people.
Yeah.
Wasn't my cup of tea.
And you've been on tour with our buddy here, Jeremy Prophet.
Yes, I have.
What have you thought
of
his work? And I know you're bringing him in for a show in your promotion.
Yes, Jeremy will be in the New England era for me on June 23rd at my wrestling school known as the Belltime Club, located on 537 Rear Ferry Street, right behind the 7-Eleven in Everett, Massachusetts. The bell time is 7 p.m. And as always, for our TV, it is free to the 50-seat arena that we use. It's a tightly knit. We tape like the old school NWA. The last time Jeremy was there, there were lights on. Now we have put studio lighting in where we cut the black. We've gone a long way in our television production. Come on down. It's a great, great evening of free entertainment for the fans, fun for the kids, gets you out of the house. There's soda, as they call it in Canada. There's pop there to drink. There's some chips. There's some hot dogs. There's pizza and more. Plus 3 weeks of television that we'll be taping. Each episode is roughly 48 hours to tape. So you're getting 3 hours of wrestling for free that evening. Then the Victory Championship Wrestling rolls in Sunday, June 24th, Quincy, Mass, to the American Legion, 81 Liberty Street in Quincy. 2 p.m. matinee bell time. Tickets will be sold at the door, $12, and you will see Canadian superstar. That's right, right here. I'm telling you this. If I had a job with the WWE or TNA, my first acquisition and or signing to a contract would be the man, the myth, the legend that will be, and that is my boy on the other line. That's right. Jeremy Prophet would be my first signed, sealed, and delivered guy. I never seen Jeremy from a hole in the freaking wall. He shows up to my shows. Not only was his look incredible, but he could wrestle. And he is locker room etiquette, the way he shows up. I can't say more. And I hope there's a WWE guy out there or a TNA guy out there that is listening to me at this time and moment. You hand money out to idiots that don't deserve the dollars. There's a kid on that line right there that I can honestly say, whether it's John Laurinaitis, whether it's Al Snow, who I preach your Bible, when I have taken your class, and Al Snow, I preach it. If, other than Walter Kowalski, I love the way Al Snow teaches professional wrestling. I'm telling you, I'm a high believer in Jeremy Prophet's skills. I love the fact that he comes down for me into the United States. When it came time for promoting the tour in Canada, he was the first person I thought of.
Oh, that's great to hear. You know,
I can't say enough
yeah.
of his talent.
And also, know? I understand, I think, Jeremy, are you bringing Johnny North with you as well?
I am bringing Johnny North with me.
Man.
Genesis will be at the shows.
Jason, have
Everett
you
and inclusive.
Jason, have you ever seen Johnny North?
No, but from what I understand, this guy is a giant jacked machine.
Yep.
And when it comes to Jeremy, I can honestly say he doesn't roll. He looks to me like he's not the type of guy that rolls with Jay Brones.
No, not at all.
When he came down with Paul Rosenberg, I'm very impressed with Paul Rosenberg. He brought a ref down. The ref needs a little work, but what ref doesn't need a little bit of work in the independent scene? He brought Ryan Rogan. He brought Ryan Rogan on the tour to Canada. He's one of them guys where if you looked at the cover and he was a book, you probably wouldn't read him. But if it was a blind guy and you went in there blindfolded and you grabbed that book and then opened it and read it, you would be amazed. Okay?
Yeah.
That's the way. If you looked at Ryan Rogan, you'd be like, I don't know. You watch this kid wrestle, and you're like, holy f***ing shiza. It's incredible.
Yeah, Ryan Rogan's definitely one of my favorites.
And he's got great locker room etiquette. So I'm a fan of Ryan Rogan, too.
Yeah.
Ryan Rogan needs a couple of bits and pieces. And I think Ryan Rogan, height-wise, look-wise, attitude-wise, that kid could make make some moves in the sport of professional wrestling.
Well, if you liked Ryan Rogan, you like Jeremy Pruffy, you like Paul Rosenberg, you're going to love Johnny North as well. The guy is an absolute monster and a good friend of ours as well. And obviously, Profit, Jason Rumble putting you over as, you know, as everyone that sees you, right?
Yeah, and you know, I can't thank Jason enough for his kind words. You know, it really means a lot to me. And if I could say in return, Jason is someone that, in the short period of time that I've known him, you know, I've just learned so much from this man. And he has an incredible knowledge. And if there's, you know, anyone out there listening, any, you know, wrestlers that are out there, if you get the chance to be on a show with Jason Rumble, this is someone that you should definitely pick his brain. And I guarantee, you know, just in having a simple conversation with him, you know, you can learn a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this business and when it comes to so many aspects of professional wrestling. It's really a pleasure for me to go down to Massachusetts, to have the opportunity to go down there and see him and get the chance to perform on his shows. Jason is an awesome guy, and Dave, I don't know if you've seen any of his work, but I can tell you that if you were to see Jason wrestle, he would easily be one of your favorites.
I'm sure I would. I'm going to look you up for sure, Jason, and hopefully Profit brings down his ring announcer buddy as well so that I can see you work in person.
That would be awesome, man. Anytime, brother. Anytime you want to hop in the vehicle and come on down to the great United States, the great state of Massachusetts, the great city of Boston, come on down. It's a really cool place. Even if you're not a Bruins fan and you're a Canadiens fan, I'll welcome you.
I'm not a Canadiens fan, Jason, but I have to tell you, I am a Yankee fan, so...
Oh, brother, that's the worst thing of all, but I'll still like you for the day.
All right, good. Jason, it's been good talking to you. I know you're going to have a lot of fun with Jeremy and John next week, and we'll talk to you again here real soon, hopefully on the program.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to all the wrestling fans out there. Look me up on Facebook, Jason Rumble. You can look up Belltime Club/VCW Live if you're an aspiring professional wrestler. And, you know, you graduate from high school, you want to go to college, why not go to wrestling school instead? It's cheaper.
Exactly.
Come to the Belltime Club. Learn from me, the BBB, the three-time NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion, trained by the legendary Walter Killer Kowalski, a man who dominated the Canadian professional wrestling scene for a long, long time, former Grand Prix Heavyweight Champion. Incredible Walter was. He was one of the only guys that could go into the Montreal Forum and come out alive.
Yeah, Killer Kowalski. I mean, people still talk about Killer Kowalski here in Montreal. That's how much he left his imprint here on this city. People still come up and talk to me. You know, the old-timers, they talk to me about Killer Kowalski. No one will ever forget him. No one will ever forget him. I mean, hey, he trained Jason Rumble and Triple H, so...
There we go, man.
Why not, right?
Well, I'll let you guys do what you gotta do. You can wrap this on up. Search us out on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, VCW Live. Check us out, man. We're underneath the bed. We need to come out from underneath the bed and let every wrestling fan know about VCW, Jeremy Profit, the Boston Bad Boy, the Belltime Club Wrestling Training Center, Boston, Mass itself. Guys, it's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you for having me on.
Jason, thanks very much, man.
Thank you, Jason.
All right.
Bye.
You're welcome.
So that's our show for tonight. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Jason Rumble. Profit, when will you be in the ring? I know we talked about it a little bit with Jason, but your next match, when will that be? When can people see you kick some jabroni ass?
Well, that's going to be this coming Saturday as I head down to Everett, Massachusetts to the Belltime Club to take part in 3 weeks of television tapings, and the next day we're making our debut. VCW, Victory Championship Wrestling, makes its debut in Quincy, Massachusetts. First time I'm going to Quincy. I hear it's a pretty nice city. So, yeah, I'll be looking forward to doing that. And I think we usually have, we have a tweeter of the week or something from the Massachusetts area. He usually calls in during our live shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I happen to meet the gentleman, I'll let you know. And, yeah, I'll give him a yeah on your behalf.
Yeah, and, yeah, hopefully, I think it's Pat Debo on Twitter who follows us from the Boston area. Hopefully he can go check out the show next week. Prophet, that does it for the show here tonight. I'll be back here on TSN 990 this Wednesday night at 10 p.m. to break down everything in the UFC and the MMA world. WWWrestlingUncensored.net, in the meantime, is our website. That's our show for tonight. For Jeremy Prophet, I am Dave Simon, and this has been Wrestling Uncensored.
I'm a descendant of either Marley or Hendrix. I haven't figured it out cause my story is far from finished. I'm hearing all of the jokes. I know that they trying to push me. I know they're showing